Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. This is episode 190. Oh my God, so close to 200. We're getting there, folks. Oh, so exciting. This week's episode is with comedian from Perth, Sarah Furtner, and now, as of recently, an author. How impressive. Before we kick into this week's episode, you guys know the drill. If we haven't met before, my name's Andy Dowling. I host this little podcast of mine, and I also play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. And we have a freaking new album coming out on the 1st of August called Fallen Idols. You can have a sticky beak now and you can pre-order this sucker by going to lord.net.au/FI. And that's FI for Fallen Idols, folks. Go over there, check it out. It's got the whole track listing for the Australian version of this album, which is the main first pressing that we're doing. It contains three bonus tracks, two cover songs. One's a John Farnham cover song. The other one's an Ice House cover song. And the third bonus track is a Lord original, a bonus studio track that's on this first pressing. And disclaimer, folks, this first pressing is almost sold out. By the time this episode comes out, it may already be sold out. So do not hesitate. Go over to lord.net.au/FI, go and pre-order your copy. You can get the album on its own, just the CD, and we can sign it if you wish. The second option is a t-shirt and a CD together. You can pick that one. Or the third option is a deluxe bundle pack, which contains the CD, the t-shirt, three patches, two smaller patches and one back patch. Go and check out our Facebook and Instagram pages for some photos of those. And there's also a bonus CD, which is karaoke versions of the entire new album, plus additional bonus tracks again. That pack is listed. This pack is limited to 100 copies. So get in there quick. We're almost sold out of them. We're almost sold out of everything. And we're going to have to start repressing the new album, and it's going to have a different track listing again. So these people that have been supporting us, you, the listener, who's been supporting so much and pre-ordering this stuff, you guys will get to have something a little bit extra special with this first pressing, because we're not reprinting this again. And I've already had people cracking the shits from other parts of the world who want stock, and I've just told them, nah, sorry, folks. Our inner circle gets first dibs. So get on over there, folks, pre-order it, secure your copy, because after that, it's going to be a different release altogether. Well, not altogether, just some of the bonus tracks are disappearing, you know, drill. Anyway, go over there, lord.net.au/FI. Fuck, I waffle. And also, I'm getting there, folks. Friday, the 26th of July, at Crowbar in Sydney, formerly the Ballface Stag, we are having our album launch show. It is the last show of our first Australian leg tour. I can't even get these words out. They're all coming out of my mouth, out of order. But the 26th of July at Crowbar in Sydney, we're going to launch our album. We're going to have a big party. We want Sydney people to come out. This is the Forge Heavy Metal Nightclub. We are headlining it. We've got a great lineup of bands. Get your tickets in advance. Support this. Sydney needs it. We need more metal. And I really want to show the rest of the country what Sydney can still do. So get on out there, come and say hi, let's have a beer, grab the album, enjoy the set, lots of new things happening. We've got a great set. People around the country in Canberra, Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne have been enjoying our set with new songs and old favourites in there, and Sydney will be no exception as well. So make sure you come along if you're in the Sydney area on the 26th of July. We'll play a few songs for you. Now, in addition to being a heavy metal warrior, I don't know why I struggle with these intros so much, but you know, I just do my best, folks. I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if you're one of these people that is just filled with ideas, but you don't do anything with them, you know, that all talk, no action kind of person, or maybe you're stuck in an office cubicle and you've just been dreaming of getting out, or maybe you know somebody who just needs a gentle little kick up the ass. Go to selfstarter.com.au, check it out. Season 2 is up and running now. We're a few episodes into that, and Season 2 will run until the end of this year. And then Season 3 will kick off, I won't get too far ahead of myself, but maybe mid-2020. We'll see how we go. Anyway, we're in the midst of Season 2. Enjoy it, embrace it. And Season 1 is up as well, so go back and listen to some of the old episodes. Lots of different industries, different people, different walks of life. Don't be deterred if an industry has no interest for you. You may learn something new. So go and give it a shot. Selfstarter.com.au. Check it out in your favorite podcast player, maybe the one that you're listening through right now, and let me know what you think. Thank you very much. Shout-out time. Every week, I thank some legend, some champion, some good person. I'm giving a thumbs up as I said that. A good person who supports me and the podcast. And it can be a range of different ways. It could be a bit of social media love. It could be a message of encouragement. It could be buying some merch from the online store. It could be shouting me a beer via the PayPal button over at andysocial.net. It could be leaving a review somewhere in the internet. And folks, I haven't had a review in so fucking long. So maybe go and, I don't know, if you're feeling generous, go and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Facebook or somewhere, or a community notice board, whatever. Leave me a review. Let me know. Send a screenshot. I'd love to thank you personally. Moving along. Or it could be a guest recommendation, like this week's shout out. So every week I thank one person, put them on public record. It's just my little way of saying thanks. It's my way of giving back just a little bit. And it gives me an excuse to dig into my cupboard in my home office, find some crap lying around, dump it into a little package and send it to wherever it needs to go around the world. It's my little way of saying thanks, and we all love getting something in the mail, and I promise that it won't be literal crap. It'll be a surprise, trust me. So anyway, this week's shout out is for Erica Robertson from Stanhope Gardens. Erica gave me a mammoth list of guest recommendations and quite an unusual list as well. Nobody in this list I recognize at all. Nobody well known, nobody that's really got much of a public profile or presence or anything like that. However, I got some great descriptions on each person, and these people are very interesting. They do very unusual jobs. They have very unusual professions. They do things that many of us would have no clue about, but would find incredibly fascinating. So Erica, thank you so much for this list. It makes my job so much easier, and I'm definitely going to dig into this because it's not just about people that have a presence online or have a profile or anything like that. I'm just looking for interesting people, people that I find interesting, get to have a chat to them, learn more about what they do and what they're all about, and then be able to share that with all of you as well. So Erica, this is a massive help. I am in such a better position these days with people like yourself giving me guest recommendations. I don't have to scratch my head or my ass trying to work out who I'm going to get onto the podcast. It's just so much easier these days. The hardest thing is just pinning people down, but I'm never short of recommendations. So people like yourself, Erica, are a huge help. So when you hear this, please shoot me a message and I will get some stuff that's been lying around my house and chuck it into a little package and shoot out to you in the post, because we all like getting something in the mail. So thank you so much, Erica. It is greatly appreciated. Now, moving along, a few more people to thank. I have a page that's dedicated to all the shit that I sell on the internet. If you go to andysocial.net/buy stuff, you'll find links to The Lord online store, Dominus Records, our label store that has everything from Lord to Black and Angel to From Beyond to Serenity Defiled, all of our bands and projects that all fall under Dominus Records. It also has my online store for the podcast. And on this page, there's also an eBay store that Jess and I run that has an eclectic mix of clothing and music merchandise and odds and ends and unwanted gifts. Sorry, folks, I know that someone's going to listen to this one day and go, you sold the thing that I gave you. Sorry, stop giving me crap. I don't want presents. Stop giving me presents. Anyway, sorry. And I've also got a Discogs store. And the Discogs store is 1,800 plus records, CDs, cassettes, DVDs, ranging from punk to metal to rock to pop to jazz to, I think there's even some sort of house music in there, maybe. I don't know. There's heaps of random odds and ends, lots of great stuff in there, rare stuff, common stuff, cheap stuff, expensive stuff. It's all in there over at Discogs. So you can check out all of these online stores via andysocial.net/buy stuff. If you have trouble getting through to any of those links, let me know and I will hook you up with a direct link. If you hear me crapping on in these intros about this stuff, shoot a little extra message with your order and I will add some extra stuff in. Just my little way of saying thank you. And it's great to know that people, well, I wouldn't say enjoy listening to my voice, but put up with it anyway during these intros. So go and check it all out, andysocial.net/buy stuff. And a little thank you to a few people that support along the way. Here we go. Here's my list. Philip from Dover in Ohio, I think, in the US. OH is Ohio. Anyway, Tom from Waratah in New South Wales. Rick from Sandia Park in New Mexico. Derp. Dave, again, from East Lakes, New South Wales. That guy, I think he's pretty much paid for a mortgage for a house for me. Jamie from Regent's Park in Queensland. And Donald from Johnson City, Tennessee in US of A. Thank you very much, folks. Appreciate the support. Keep all of it coming and just love what you guys do. And it helps me. All this shit that I sell and I declutter and turn over just helps me reinvest back into me. The podcast and everything that I do. So it's a massive help, and you guys get some cool little things along the way as well. So make sure you include a message to say that you heard me crapping on about it, and I'll add some extra stuff in there as well. But that's enough. Thank you very, 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 very much. Episode 190 of the podcast this week is with Perth comedian and now author, Sarah Furtner. Now, a little bit of a fun fact for you people playing along at home. Sarah is the cousin of the infamous Mark Furtner. Mark Furtner also plays in Lord with me, and he is probably one of the most requested guests of this podcast who is not on the podcast yet. So Mark is a little bit elusive, a bit high maintenance, pain in the ass to try and pin down for a conversation, but I'm hoping I can get that happening in the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that. And sorry, Sarah, I'm just completely letting your cousin take the limelight here. So we'll move back to you. So anyway, Sarah, who's Mark's cousin, is a comedian from Perth, and she just recently put out a book called 6,222 Syllables, which is a collection of 366 haikus. And these have been put together by Sarah over a period of time, and they are divided into a number of different topics. Things such as body and mind, leisure time, the highs and lows of hetero coupling. Coupling, is that right? Coupling? Anyway, whatever. Nostalgia, socials and injustices and warriors. Lots of cool and interesting topics. And they're written in a very humorous way, given Sarah's background as a comedian, but also very raw and vulnerable in places. It's a really enjoyable read, very easy to get through the book, but very, very entertaining. So if you want to check out the book or learn more about Sarah or check out her comedy, you can go to sarahfurtner.com.au. The book you can pick up via Booktopia or a lot of the online sort of booksellers. And I think Sarah mentions a bunch of other retailers, at least locally in Perth, in this chat as well. You can also follow Sarah on the socials on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook by searching at Sarah Furtner or sarah.furtner. But I'll put all the links in the show notes over at andysocial.net. Now, before we kick into it, one final little piece of information. Disclaimer time. This is round two. This is take two. The reason why this is take two is that we did a full episode previously, a few months back. And, well, the episode just disappeared. It fucked up. It was gone. And so I didn't have anything left to work with. So we tried to recapture everything in take two. And look, to be honest, I think it worked out a lot better because some of the nerves were gone, at least from my end. I don't know why I was nervous speaking to Sarah. I've known her for years, but maybe, well, look, if you're going to write a book with 366 odd haikus, there's a little bit of intimidation there, I think, from my end. So in round two, some of those nerves had moved to the side, and I think we had a really great conversation here. So you'll hear us sort of refer back to what we've been speaking about previously. That's just us referring back to the first take that we attempted to do. But there you go. So a really great chat. Lots of interesting things. We talk about poetry, of course. We talk about how the book came together. Sarah's love of writing, talk about comedy, and we talk about all sorts of different things. So as I said before, sarahfurtner.com.au, and everything will be in the show notes as well. So enough crapping on, waffling on, rambling on from me. Please enjoy this great episode with Sarah Furtner. How does a comedian or somebody that's been sort of identifying themselves as a comedian for a few years now, because you've been doing it for quite some time, make the decision to release a book and something that's not primarily focused on comedy?
That's a good question. It's something that I wanted to do. I guess with my comedy and stuff, like, that's one aspect of me. I don't know. I think at the moment, like, with comedy and comedians and stuff, people are being a bit more diverse and stuff. I think that you have to be a bit in this world because, you know, like, you can't just use the same hack jokes and tread down on people and that sort of thing, as once was a, kind of usual trope, I guess, with comedy and stuff back in the day. Like, if you look back at what was acceptable stand-up comedy in like the 90s or the 80s and that sort of thing, it's definitely a lot different to what is around today. And yeah, it's not, bad to be a bit more diverse. I mean, look at Hannah Gadsby and Nanette. That was, quite different from what normal stand-up would be. And that was a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like that, this was something that I wanted to do. I know that probably not everyone that's into my comedy would be into this, but, you know, why I don't feel like I should be specifically catering to one audience all the time. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would assume that with this book, you would probably attract a bunch of people that would not be aware of your comedy or your comedy background and be sort of brought in through the book itself. And then I guess as a secondary thing, then sort of discover you as a comedian after that, because obviously the book, you know, we'll get into it in a moment, but it does have your humor attached to it. It's not just this very sort of dry, ultra serious sort of collection of thoughts and observations of life. It's got your humor injected through it, but it's not like when I read it and when I've gone through it, it's not pushed onto you. It's not like, hey, I'm trying to be funny in every single, little haiku that I've put together and collected into this book. It's a case of you just sort of naturally putting your own personality into each one.
Yeah. Well, as I was saying, there's different aspects, I guess, to everyone's personality. I mean, if you meet a bunch of comedians in real life, a lot of them are the most depressed people that you'll ever meet. And depressed and anxious and everything. And but, you know, the front that they put on stage is one thing. And with this book, like, I can't really escape my humorous tone at times. I guess that is just a part of me. I figured that this wasn't going to be like a book of comedy poems or anything. And so there are some that are funny and there are some that aren't, but they're really short, so it is very hard to try and convey humor over 17 syllables.
Well,
all the time.
Well, that's it. And I think, we've spoken about this before, but, trying to be sort of not intentional, but try to get a message across in a very sort of limited space, there's a bit of art to it. I mean, it's a lot of us, myself included, especially having a podcast where I waffle on and on and on, sometimes it takes me a long time to get to the point, and where you've got something where you're forced to have to articulate a thought into, three lines, you have to be really sort of careful. It would take some time to put together some of these haikus.
Yeah, well, some of them happen really quickly, and then others you kind of labour over for a while, because I also have the tendency to waffle. This was like a really good exercise for me to be more concise and stuff. And so at times, like, I'd have this like grand idea for like a haiku, and, I'd write it out and I'd try and be like really concise as I was writing out my idea, but even still that was too long to fit, and so you're sitting there for ages kind of going, well, what's a better word in less syllables for this, and trying to cull it down and still convey the same like intent and meaning behind it, but with a lot.
I've got this sort of vision of you opening up a thesaurus or something like that, or on Google typing in what are similar words to this, and just going through a list just to find something that's you know two syllables instead of three or whatever it is, just to try and like just break it right down.
Yes, I might have done that a couple of times, but I did get the nickname the Human Thesaurus in high school. I was a bit of an English nerd. I was one of those people that I did 4 units of English in Year 12. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's given me a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah. I have no idea why I inflicted that on myself at such a young age. Should have done woodwork.
Get yourself a trade.
Yeah.
as parents usually say. Yeah. With, I mean, obviously, oh, geez, I mean, that sort of commitment at high school for anything is pretty out there, but English is not the easiest of subjects to tackle, especially to that level of depth. But obviously, you have an appreciation for words and for, you know, articulating thought and story and whatever it might be. So it sounds like this has been sort of a natural progression for you, or something that you've wanted to do. Maybe not so much just the syllable book that you put together, but this is something that's been in the back of your mind as far as I want to get into writing. I want to be able to pursue something along this path as well as everything else.
Yeah, definitely. It was always something in the back of my mind, just something that I would like to do. And I guess at the moment in my current like stage in life, I've got a young daughter, and I've got a partner that works FIFO for, I don't know if that's a common thing on the East Coast or other places around the world, but that's a fly-in, fly-out.
I was going to say, what does that stand for? I was going to pretend I knew what you're talking about. But no, I understand the concept. I've never heard it referred to that way, though.
Oh, okay. So,
FIFO,
yeah.
There you go.
Yes, fly in, fly out. So he's only here half the time.
Yep.
And, well, not even that. And then, so, yes, half the time I'm a single parent but without the benefits. And so it's difficult to do stand-up comedy at the moment. So I kind of decided that for the time being I will focus more on writing. And, like, what I do definitely like miss doing stand-up. I haven't done it for about a year now, but yeah, so in the meantime I've just been more focused on writing. But yeah, I will probably go back and do stand-up comedy when I can find a lot more reliable, really cheap babysitters.
Well, I've heard people talk about business ideas around like Uber versions of babysitters, and I think, oh, that sounds scary. But hey, you never know what the future will bring. So yeah, keep your eyes out.
That'd be, I don't know. In a way, it's a bit scary because you know you like to kind of know who's looking after your kids. But not a bad idea. There, it would be good having quite easy access to babysitting and stuff. So whoever's developing that, yes, get on that. Hurry up.
I think, look, we won't take too much of a tangent, but my the cogs are turning already. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you just need the appropriate cards. You can do a rating system and there's all sorts of sort of incentives to do the right thing and vetting people. And anyway, I mean, years ago, I can't remember who says this. It might be Gary Vaynerchuk or one of those guys, but they said, like, years ago you would never think to put your kid into an Uber car, like a car with a stranger, basically, instead of a taxi or something like that. And now that's the norm. Like, people buy their kids, you know, their teenagers, Uber vouchers and things like that, and people aren't buying kids cars anymore because they can just get around town, especially if they're living sort of in a city area. But years ago that would be such a scary concept, but now it's just the norm. So it's who knows what's gonna come in the future, but maybe your kid will get babysat by a robot or something else.
Well, that would be good. I'm sure, like, a robot designed to specifically look after kids would probably be a bit more reliable than people.
Maybe, quite possibly.
Quite possibly. I don't know. probably by the time that happens, she'll be old enough to look after herself.
That's right. So hurry up, people. Yeah. We're going to develop something. So you, at least you can take advantage of whatever's coming along. Yeah. Going back to what you said before, I mean, you know, with this book itself, had you had this idea in your head for quite some time to do this book, or, you know, had you been thinking about writing books for a long time? I mean, what was sort of the sequence of events when it came to this one?
Okay, so this one wasn't really the first, like, project idea at all, and it kind of came about because I had actually written like a manuscript for another novel, like a full novel, not a book of haiku poems, and it was, I'd submitted it to this competition, and I think there was like a 6-month wait or something before you even heard about whether or not like you'd made the shortlist or anything like that. And so that was March last year that I submitted that. And in February last year, I'd done a show. So at the very start of last year, I'd gotten two major projects out of the way really early on. And then afterwards, I was kind of like, what do I do now? And so I was feeling a bit stuck and everything, and so I started doing, or one of my friends recommended this book to me called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which I thought was just a book at first, but it's actually like a whole bunch of workshops and that sort of thing. It's like a 12 or 13 week thing where you're given a huge list of activities to do each week, and one of the weeks, I can't remember which one it was, you know, what's something creative that you like to do as a child, now do that. And so I kind of thought about it, I was like, oh, what did I like doing? And I remembered that I used to, or we were taught how to write haiku poems and stuff in year four, I think it was. And so I decided I'd just, you know, tinker around with those, and I wrote a few, and suddenly, like a week later, I had like about 40 or 50 of them, something like that. And I was just like, I like doing silly challenges with myself and stuff. And so I decided I would try and write 366 of them, because, you know, one for every day of the year, including leap years. And so that's how I picked that number. And I decided that I was going to try and write 366 of them. And then I did. And then, you know, that was going to be that. But then one of my friends was kind of reading through a couple of them and stuff and was like, you should put this together in a book. So here we are.
So, I mean, it's kind of cool because obviously, and I've spoken to other people who do different types of challenges, especially when it comes to, like, you know, it might be someone who's an artist and drawing or something like that, and they'll draw a piece every day of the year or something like that, just something to give them a challenge and to be consistent and try and follow through. And while you haven't just done one a day, but you've aimed for that number, it's pretty cool that you've just done that without the intention of actually doing anything at the end of it. It's just more of you're enjoying it and just to see whether you can do it, basically to amuse yourself. But it's only been after the case that somebody's thrown the suggestion at you that you thought, oh, actually, maybe that's an all right idea. So that's kind of cool, because a lot of people will sort of think, okay, well, I'm only going to commit to this because I know that there's going to be an end goal of producing something or being able to show everybody that I've done something and I don't know, monetizing it and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's cool.
Well, I don't know. I think sometimes to me, like, having, you know, deadlines and stuff is really good. But at other times, I don't know, I'm not very consistent in my creativity. Like at times I need to have a deadline and an end goal, and then other times I definitely need to not have that pressure and have, you know, see where this goes. So that was definitely this project. It was a let's see where this goes sort of thing. There wasn't a particular deadline or anything.
Do you think that made it more enjoyable for you because you did it that way instead of putting some hard deadlines on the whole concept?
Yes, in the writing process, definitely. It was a lot more fun than other things I've worked on. But then once the idea of you should turn this into a book and everything, because I did self-publish it, learning how to self-publish, and then I kind of would try and set deadlines for myself of like I need to get this amount of them like edited and put in order and this sort of thing. So that side of it was a bit more stressful. Mm. But, yeah, the writing section of it was really enjoyable. But then, yeah.
How long did it take you to put together the, you know, the 366 haikus?
I think it was about 4 months all up.
Okay.
Yeah. It was about that. There'd be some, like, days where I would write, like, 20 or something in a day, and then there'd be days where I'd be busy working on other things and nothing would get done. But, yeah, I think it took about 4 months all up. So,
because in the book it's quite good because you've put them into different buckets, different topics, you know, so, and it's all sort of everyday relatable sort of things. So you've got things such as family life, you've got body and mind, food, beverage, the weather, lots of like just everyday things, and you've just got your own spin or your own take on these topics. But when you're putting them together, did you have any sort of method as far as how you're collating them? Were you sort of thinking about topics, or were you just basically brain dumping as many as you could as you thought of them?
It was basically a brain dump. And then, yeah, at the end of it, when I was kind of going, when my friend had suggested, thanks, Colin, put this together in a book, I was just like, oh, well, they're not really, they don't make much sense. Like, they're not very cohesive. And so then I decided to, yeah, I printed them all out and cut them up and then spent ages, like, trying to work them out into a order and by topics and that sort of thing. So that, yeah, took a lot more time than probably actually writing
it. Yeah, because there are some in there that you read, and I think if you didn't have the context of, I guess, that overarching theme, it probably wouldn't have the same punch as it would if it had none of that context or none of that theme.
Mm. Well, yeah. So, yeah, initially, like, it was all higgledy-piggledy and, like, a kind of brain dump and stuff. But, yeah, when I was going through them and stuff, like, I knew what the intent behind some of the more vague ones were and stuff. So I was like, well, that one's, you know, a bit more relationship sort of thing, even though, you know, you might, if you just read it on its own without any context, it could mean anything. So, yeah, I tried to categorize them into where I was coming from.
And I like some of them where you've, instead of just having like sort of the one haiku on its own that's sort of separate to everything else, you've got like a series that sort of link in together, because you're reading it and you realize, oh, this is a follow-on from the last one, and sort of like a sequence of events, and it's actually quite good. I think there's one about you sort of something like falling down the stairs or something like that at a pub or something like that, and I thought, oh, I think I've done something very similar to that, especially when I read sort of part two of that haiku. I thought, oh, there you go, there's the consequence or the outcome.
Yeah. So, yeah, some of them were written in the order that they have been printed, and then some of them definitely were not. But, yeah, it's a bit of a mix. But it made sense to me in the end. It made sense to me the whole way through, but I think in the end it makes sense to other people as well. So.
Yeah, and I think it's good in the way that
a lot of it's relatable. Like, you know, me reading through it, I'm sort of drawing parallels into my own life and thinking, oh yeah, I've been there, or I've had those same thoughts. And a lot of stuff where I think you've probably been a little bit vulnerable in places, as far as, you know, removing or not having any intention to put humor around it, but just basically being quite raw with what you're feeling and what you're thinking. And I think a lot of us sort of have similar thoughts but never articulate them in any way because we feel like idiots. And you sort of flown the flag with a few of them, and it's really cool, because I mean I do that with this podcast as well. I'll crap on about something or ask a stupid question and feel silly about it, but then somebody else later on will go, oh, thank God you asked that, because I've never had the guts to ask anybody or ask that question before, because I've just assumed that or thought that I should know that already myself. So I got a similar sort of feeling reading a lot of the haikus in your book.
Well, I think that also comes from doing comedy and stuff, because you often find that the stuff that you feel like, oh, I should know this, like, not many people do.
Yeah.
Everyone's just faking it. So, yeah, if you allow yourself to be a bit more vulnerable and stuff, yeah, you find that you're a bit more relatable to your audience or your readers and that sort of thing. So,
Did you get, like, I assume sort of if you're reflecting back to the first few times that you got on stage and started doing stand-up versus putting this book out, did you have a similar sort of set of feelings around nerves or putting yourself out there in a way that is a little bit vulnerable? Or was it a completely different sort of set of feelings altogether?
The first couple of times I did stand-up, well, the first time I did stand up, I was probably a lot more confident with that than I was with, releasing this book to the world. I don't know, like, I was quite young. I'd had quite a few drinks behind me. Growing up, I did, like, loads of public speaking and debating and that sort of stuff at school. So talking in front of people wasn't a huge deal for me. I think it was the only thing that was different was that with stand-up, you had to have what you were going to say, like, you had to know it. Mm. Whereas, you know, usually with public speaking, when you're doing a speech about, you know, why the national anthem should be changed or whatever the topic is that they give you, like, you have your notes and stuff there. But, yeah, my first ever gig actually went really, really well, and I was like, yes, this was meant to be.
I see where this is going.
And then it was my second gig that I did where I just absolutely died on stage. And so that's where, I guess, the hubris came in. Is that the right word?
I think so.
Well, I think so.
What was
so
it about that
second
gig?
Human thesaurus. So the second gig, like the first gig, I had to wait like, I don't know, I think it was 3 weeks or something from when I booked it to actually doing the gig. And so I kind of, like, had prepared some stuff. And then, although, like, last minute, I kind of looked through my notes, not last minute, but, like, a day or two beforehand, after having, like, what I was going to say pretty much planned out for about 2 weeks at that point, I was like, nah, this is shit, and threw it out and wrote something else completely. But I'd had like a couple of days with that. And, yeah, it was something that was obviously quite good. A couple of the jokes, I think, they've evolved, but they were still kind of, like, stuff that I could still use, strangely enough. But the second gig was kind of, like, thrown upon me. One of the guys that ran the room where I did my first show had missed it, and apparently so I was talking about how awesome I did. And so he messaged me and was like, oh, my God, I've heard great things about your first set. You have to come back next week, and because I wasn't there, and I want to see your set. So I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting another gig so soon. And but I said yes, because, you know, the usual waiting time was at least 3 or 4 weeks at that point. And but then I was all like, oh, well, I was only on last week, and I've done this 5 minutes for everyone, and just, you know, felt like I had to write something completely new.
Start from scratch.
Yeah, start from scratch again. And, yeah, I think I used all my A-grade stuff in the first one. And, yeah, and, you know, like, audiences are different, you're different, like, sometimes you're on fire and you click with the audience and it goes great, and sometimes it just doesn't. But yeah, this was only my second ever gig, and, you know, the first one had gone so well. I had such high expectations of myself, and that this was how it was going to be forever and ever. And so, yeah, the second time when I got up and I had not as good material and stuff, I, yeah, bombed massively on
stage. So, I mean, in hindsight, would you have just done the same set again?
Yeah, I might have changed like a couple of bits of the set, but I would have done pretty much the same set. I guess, yeah, because even though it was the same venue and stuff, I've since learnt that it's very rare that people go to a comedy show like week after week. There might be like one or two people out there that are like very massively into comedy and go see it really regularly. But they're often people that want to do stand-up themselves but haven't signed up, and they're just kind of learning through observation and stuff. But general audience and stuff, even if people are a regular comedy goer, they probably only go once every 6 months. So the chances of you doing a set one night and then the very next week doing the same set, like people in the audience being the same audience members, is really low. So, you know, so, you can repeat material.
So you learnt very quickly that you don't have to have a million different things on hand and keep changing it up and be fresh every single set. You can, you are allowed to continue to work on the existing material.
Yes, yes. I think it, yeah, well, it took me a little while to realise it, but a couple of gigs. And then, yeah, I think a couple of the people were like, you can repeat stuff. We all do it. Yeah.
Well, and I think also because, like you said it before, like you know, depending on what's happening on the night, it could be, you know, the energy in the room, it could be how you're feeling, and, you know, you could be saying the same set of jokes for the next set, whenever that is, but because of all these additional sort of factors, that set could feel completely different even though you're saying the same jokes, like the delivery or just the pace or whatever, or just how you're feeling could just completely change it even though you're saying more or less the same stuff that you've said previously.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I think it's unfair to expect, like, if you're going to see an improv show, that's one thing, but I think it's unfair to expect that stand-up comics are, like, constantly changing their set night to night. I mean, you wouldn't expect the same thing from musos or anything. So, but yeah, like, and repeating jokes and stuff, you're not going to be able to do it word for word every time. And so things will get tweaked, and you'll find that, like, different taglines and that sort of thing work better than others. Like, there'll be one night where you'll just think of something on the spot, and then that might go really well and you'll go, well, that's a line I should use all the time. And that's a better way of ending the joke. And, yeah, so, like, even if you are repeating jokes, they do evolve and stuff. So they're not completely the same all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And even, I mean, you know, you mentioned before, like, with, you know, musicians, like, being in a band, like, you know, I would love the idea of just having a completely different set every single show that we play, but to get everybody to be able to learn that many songs and to be sort of competent enough to be able to pull them off at a drop of a hat, unless we're doing it sort of 24/7, it's just near impossible. But, you know, even if we do a tour, you know, and we've got a set list that we're working on, and that's going to be the same set list for every single show, we know that show one versus show three versus show six or two or whatever it is going to have its own energy and it's going to be different. So even if you do have somebody that decides that they want to, well, in our case, waste all their money and see us play more than once on a tour, they will still get a different show, even though the set list is exactly the same. They're gonna see us interact with each other differently, interact with the crowd differently, play the songs slightly differently each time. Sometimes we'll be locked in and very sort of tight and sounding great, and other times it'll be extremely loose and a few mistakes and a bit messy here and there. But it's all part of, I guess, that it's live sort of absolutely, yeah, definitely.
Well, I went and saw you guys on a Friday and then the Saturday night when you're over in Perth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, geez, that's going back a few years. Would that have been the Civic and maybe Rocket Room or something like that?
I think so.
Yeah. That's going back a long time.
Really long time. Let's not show our age.
Oh, yeah. We're ancient. Definitely.
Yeah.
Going back to what you said before with that second show and basically bombing and having this wake-up call, I mean, did that sort of really sort of push you back as far as having you think about whether this is the right thing for you to do? Because a lot of people sort of, it takes one thing and they go, oh, stuff this, it's not cut out for me, and they'll give up. But obviously you didn't. But was that a really hard thing for you to sort of experience and go through?
I was like quite hot. I was a bit heartbroken at the time, but it was more embarrassed than anything. Then I went downstairs to the bar and did a couple of tequila shots. And
that's the way to handle it.
And I think I got a couple of the tequila shots for free because the bartender was all like, oh, you're with the Comedy Room, are you? And I think that was a major draw card for me to continue because I was pretty poor at the time. I can get free drinks doing this.
Whatever it takes to keep you moving. I love that. So it was the incentive of free alcohol rather than anything else that kept you going through the harder moments.
Yes. Well, you know, yes, that was a good motivator during the hard times. Yes, definitely.
How long was it between sort of that second gig and then the next one that you went up and had another stab at it?
I think it was only a couple of weeks after that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I guess a couple of the older comics kind of had chats with me and were telling me about other venues that are around Perth and stuff because, yeah, I wasn't really that aware of, the Perth comedy scene. And so, yeah, I got introduced to other people and, just, like, booked gigs in other places and stuff. And then I think it was only about a month after the bombing gig that I had entered, like, the Raw Comedy Competition. And so, yeah, I was like, well, I've already signed up to that, so I've got to get my shit together and stop feeling sorry for myself and just do it.
So versus that sort of experience and with this book, putting it out in a different type of vulnerability that you're putting out there? I mean, did you sort of have flashbacks, like these traumatic sort of post-traumatic sort of feelings of that bombing gig, or those first few sort of things of experiencing sort of comedy that you had with the book? I mean, was it just a completely different experience?
It was similar in terms of like fear of bombing and that sort of thing, but I guess like the feelings of it hit me beforehand rather than after the fact. I think with comedy, I was just like, I'm gonna do it, like give it a go. Like my first gig, it was kind of like, we'll just see how it goes. It's not the be all and end all. If I don't do well with it, just give it a shot. It's something that I've always wanted to do, but, you know, I wasn't hooked on it yet. And whereas like this, it's a book that like lasts longer than a 5-minute set. Like, you know, with doing a show, like if you're just doing a 5-minute open mic set, then, you know, once it's done, it's done. It's not as if it...
You can let it go.
Yeah. Whereas, like, the book feels a bit more permanent, sort of thing, because it's out there and there's physical copies of it. And...
Did you...
Yeah, so I was worried about that. I think it was different worries.
Yeah, did you have, like, was it a case of, like, how certain people that you knew or just strangers would react to the book or to some of the haikus in there? Was there anything sort of, because as we said before, like, there's some stuff in there that's quite personal, it's your sort of views on different types of situations that in some cases involve different people as well. Were you sort of a little bit cautious with that, or do you think, oh, like, I wonder how that person's gonna take what has basically been going on inside my head and now articulated in paper?
Yeah, I was a bit worried about that. I don't know whether or not I assume that my father has read it, or at least read bits of it, because he said that he bought it. He was over in Ireland when it came out. I was trying to keep it on the down low. Unfortunately, he's now on Facebook.
Oh, there you go. Look out. you know when a social media platform's going down the drain when everyone's parents get on there and start using it. It's like, oh, I'll turn to move on.
Yeah. It's weird. It's annoying because I've had it for years and years. Like, I don't know. 12, I don't know how long, ages. And that some of the stuff I used to write is my status updates. Like, it was, you know, with the confidence that my parents were never going to see this. And then I think it's only been like the last year my dad's signed up to Facebook, and he'll message me and be like, what's this that you've posted? Just like, oh God, leave me alone.
Well, I mean, not to go off on too much of a tangent on Facebook, but one thing that absolutely sends me into this traumatic state is when you log into Facebook now and they've got your memories section and it pops up in the news feed. And so you click on there and you see everything that's been happening on that day since you've joined Facebook. And I scroll down to the bottom of that list and I just cringe. And there's so many things in there. I go, you know what? Sometimes this is good because it's a bit of a time capsule of what was going on and what I was thinking at the time, and other stuff. I go, delete. this is not valuable for anybody out there, not even myself. So it needs to go. And it's amazing to see, you know, especially given, as you said, like the type of audience that you had at the time, and it was sort of almost like a secluded sort of area away from people, away from certain types of people, where you could sort of freely express yourself in the moment and without sort of any feeling of consequence or reaction or anything like that, in this echo chamber of your mates.
Yeah.
And then after a while, it's sort of like, oh, it's still there, like 10 plus years later, and now everybody else can see it. Oh, shit.
I had a really bizarre one in the memories thing. like there was something that came up that was like, oh, this happened a year ago. And, you know, click here to see more of your memories from this day. Mm. And so I clicked, and for some reason, like 3 years in a row, I had basically posted the same thing.
Oh.
It was something like, oh, so overworked today. Why can't I just quit? maybe I should become a housewife. And, like, that was pretty much the status update. And I had that, like, in, you know, 2009, 2010, 2011. Wow. And I was just like, what is with this date? And me just going, I hate to work, because at that time you didn't have memories come up on Facebook. So it was just quite bizarre that that was my feeling on, I don't know, the 10th of June, year after year.
something in the sort of the weather schedule or something changes around that time of year and just it gets you into a certain frame of mind. But I mean, I've seen stuff like that as well, where it's you know, not to that exact sort of example, but, you know, things where there's similar sort of themes happening, you know, similar types of conversations or statements that you're making, where you sort of think, what on earth? And then you sort of realize, oh, well, you know, every September or whatever it is, this is usually happening or whatever, or this change is usually happening in my schedule or something. So I'm obviously commenting on that sort of stuff. But it's very weird to see, like, as you said, like years ago, those memory things never existed. And now it's almost a way of checking in on your own behavior and your own sort of habits and seeing how much you repeat yourself and how many patterns there are in our lives. And sometimes you just don't realize that because you just sort of, I don't know, you're just reacting to whatever's happening in the moment and that's it. And you just continue to move forward. But it's probably... while I do cringe and I hate to look and see what I've written in the past, there's still some interesting little lessons there or little patterns I've gone, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I should stop doing that because I look like an idiot.
I think Simon and Garfunkel wrote a song about that.
with your book, I mean, I've always been fascinated with not so much me putting a book out, but like the process of putting a book out, and a lot of people are doing it. And when, like, cause I read a lot of books around self-development, but a lot of business type books as well. And a lot of things that people talk about at the moment is, you know, the book is now almost a form of business card. Like the business card is becoming this old relic that very few people use these days, but now are printing up a book, which is sort of like a highlight of their expertise, their subject matter or whatever it is. And they hand that out and it's a bit of a promo item. So I've always been fascinated with people that have, I guess, pulled their finger out and actually created something themselves and put it out there. And I mean, I play in a band, so I know the process when it comes to, you know, pressing a CD and getting the CDs printed or records or whatever it is and releasing it, or t-shirts, merchandise, all that sort of stuff. But with a book, I mean, you don't have to go into the nitty gritty details, but what sort of, was it a daunting sort of task for you to sort of go down this path and go, I have to create like a legit real book here, like a tangible thing. Where do I start? Was it, what sort of approach did you take with it all?
Luckily for me, I have a couple of friends who have gone through the process before. So, and one of them had really recently gone through the process of publishing her own book. And so really a lot of it was me going to her and going, hi, can you help me out with this? So luckily I had that. I think nowadays, with thanks to the internet, and now that there's like print on demand and that sort of thing, it is a lot easier to like self-publish than it ever was. Like, you know, I've done other I've worked in printing, and I've done other printing stuff before. Like back when I was 19, I used to do like this little zine things, and I'd get, you know, them printed off at a printing house. And so back in those days, like I think 1,000 was the minimum quantity that I could get for like that scale press. And whereas now that's not a thing. So, so like in terms of colors for like printing and stuff, which is only really applicable on the cover for this one, like I already had a background in that, and so I knew that. And so, yeah, but like the design and stuff, which that was my friend Desiree who actually put it together. I've kind of forgotten what the question was.
No, that's all right. I was holding off because you said something. I thought, I need to ask you about this, and we'll come back to it.
Okay.
But you said that you had a zine when you were 19. Like, what on earth was the zine? I need to know.
It was called Fork.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just, it was like a thing here in Perth. I think I did about 4 issues of it. And it was like stuff about local bands and just had like, you know, kind of fun articles and stuff, like
bit of a sort of an alternative lifestyle sort of little
sort gap. Of
yeah,
I think like there was, because I'd moved to Perth, I'd only just moved to Perth at that point, and there wasn't really anything like that here. There was like a couple of the student newspapers, and there was like Express magazine, which I was like the Perth equivalent of Drum Media.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I don't even know if it's still around, or like Express I think is all online now, but I don't know if Drum Media is still a thing.
I think it kind of is, but I think it's changed. Oh, it's changed to the music now, but I think it's mostly online.
Yeah. So I was kind of, in Sydney there was a few, like I always used to go into like Red Eye Records in the city and like they'd have like a whole bunch of little zine things there, and my friend Zia and I would always get them and read them, and we loved them. And so I kind of wanted to replicate that here in Perth. So that's kind of what Fork was.
How long did you do that for?
I think it was about a year that I did that, and it was more of just a very expensive venture, but it was fun. I wanted it all colour printed, and I wanted it to be more magazine-y than, you know, like Express and that sort of thing. Do you remember back in the day when Vice was a magazine?
Yeah, wow. That's gone back a bit.
Yes. I actually mentioned this to my brother-in-law, and he was like, I did not know that Vice was ever a magazine. How old are you, Sarah?
Getting on.
That was kind of what I wanted it to be like.
It would have been a good way to, like, as you said, like you'd only just moved to Perth. And so sort of trying to sort of get a gauge of what was going on in the area. I mean, it would have been just a really creative and very sort of involved way of, very active way of finding out what's actually happening in Perth, you know, whether it be music or culture or whatever it might be, and things that just tie into your own interests, and just, you know, oh, I discovered this, I can put that into the zine and share it around with everybody else. That's, it's kind of cool. I mean, most people would just probably, well, at least these days, you'd probably just, I don't know, do a Google
search. You'd do a blog.
That's right. You'd do that now. But it's cool. I've growing up, I always fantasized about doing a music scene. As you start to get involved in the local scenes, and you're like, oh, I wanna put something out there, At least for, in my case, it didn't happen. It was all it was all in my head, never executed. But
yeah.
But that's cool. I mean, that obviously gave you at least a little bit of a foundation when it came to, I guess, the whole concept of putting together something that had to be sent off for press and printing.
Yeah.
And that would obviously give you a bit of confidence in a way to take on, I guess, the project with this book when you finally decided that, oh, wow, this is going to become a book.
Yeah. So that was helpful for that. But yes, as I was saying, like, yeah, print on demand is now a thing, which wasn't really a thing 10 years ago or so. And so that's good. Like, I did not have 1,000 copies sitting in my storeroom here that I'm trying to offload, which is nice.
It must be quite good to be able to do that, because I think not only just being stuck with so much stock and then the pressure's on you to try and, you know, move it along and sell it or, you know, give them away or trying to work out, you know, how much of a loss you're willing to take. I mean, you know, the added sort of benefit of that is not having to stress as much about the gigantic upfront cost of actually making it happen, because, you know, even up until recently, you know, a lot of people say, well, you need to be factoring in tens of thousands of dollars to be able to put a book out there. And you sort of look at it and go, oh, well, that's not for me. I'll find something else to do. I might just write on pieces of paper around the house and chuck them into a folder, and that's about it. So it's good that these services exist now.
Yes, definitely. I did not budget for tens of thousands of dollars. I think I budgeted a few hundred dollars because I, paid my cover artist and, you know, got a few copies printed and everything. But, yeah, like in terms of costs, it was way cheaper than doing the magazine back in the day, that's for sure.
Oh, there you go. And probably now it's – because it's not a zine as such where, you know, after, and I don't know how often you release them, but like say it was every month or every fortnight or whatever it is, you know, after that edition has been put out there, it's more or less disregarded, it's neglected, it's left behind because it's in the past, there's something that's replaced it. Whereas, you know, this book that you've done now, which, you know, in hindsight's become cheaper to put together, is something that's more standalone, long lasting, it can become a timeless piece because it is a time capsule and it's not sort of defined to, you know, only, you know, a fortnight where it's relevant and then just gets forgotten.
Yeah. So yes, I definitely like that about the book. that's definitely a bonus. You were saying before about people using books as business cards. I don't know whether or not I would use this as a business card. I mean, I've got stuff in here about getting my pubes waxed. And...
yeah, there's a few things where people go, oh, okay, well, that's nice to know. I'm glad certainly learning a lot more about Sarah here. Well done. But, I mean, it's kind of cool in a way because it's still, I mean, regardless of that, I think it's the fact that you're still willing to put yourself out there in a way that's authentic and genuine and people can connect with you because, you know, even though that might be something that people won't, you know, proactively talk about, there's still topics that everybody has some form of involvement in or can relate to in some way themselves. And I mean, who knows? I mean, not so much as a business card, but it's an example of what you're capable of doing and it's an example of yourself and your personality of who you are and if it's something from a writing point of view that you want to further pursue or do additional books down the track, then you're building up almost like a portfolio in a way of your projects, what you're putting out there into the world. So it's a different spin on the whole business card thing because it's still a little bit of a, you know, you're obviously selling it and you want people to buy it, but it's also a little bit of a promotional tool for yourself just to show who you are and this is what you're all about.
Yeah. Well, I'm currently working on, I'm slowly working on another novel, and actually I'm kind of doing like a collection of longer form poems. And then I've also started working on my next collection of haikus. So I'm thinking of aiming for 400 next time.
Upping the stakes.
Upping the stakes. So, yeah, I don't know. It might take a bit longer than the last one. But, yeah, look out for 6,800 syllables in the future.
The follow-up.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier on, and I know we've spoken about this previously as well, but when you were sort of writing that novel that you submitted for the competition and didn't get through, whether it be that or something else, is sort of writing a novel or writing fiction or sort of writing sort of narrative content, is that something that you're still thinking about doing down the track that you might eventually get work towards, or are you sort of just totally, you know, converted to this form of poetry now?
No, I'm not totally converted to it. I love it. It's been a lot of fun, but I do want to keep working on longer form stuff. The first one that I had written a draft that took me a few months to do, and then I had my fringe show called FIFO WIFO. So I finished the first draft and then kind of put it on the back burner for a few months while I focused on getting my fringe show together. And then when that was finished, I had like a month exactly between like the end of my show and the deadline for this competition. So I then basically rewrote the book because I wanted to change. It was originally written in third person, and then I wanted it to be in first person. And so, yeah, I rewrote the whole thing in a month and submitted it to the competition. So I'm not surprised that it didn't get through because it was very rushed.
It's such a scary thing to even just approach that concept of going, how do I change this from third to first and do it in such a quick pace as well?
Well, like, I guess on the plus side, like, the draft was there. So I knew the story and stuff. It was basically having it open on one screen and writing new, like from a different view on the other screen.
Well, I guess four subjects of English in high school would have helped you out a little bit as well.
Yeah, well, everything helps you out, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right.
So I did that, and then I've put that one on the back burner for the time being. I might revisit it in a year or two and rework it, but I've got other ideas at the moment that I am into and want to explore further. So that's what I've been working on lately, as opposed to that first novel.
Do you have a whole number of different sort of storylines or sort of like little narratives that could eventually become sort of larger stories? Because like, are you somebody like me that has like, you know, a million ideas and probably very rarely executes on a large majority of them? Is it a case that you've got sort of all these ideas? Like, oh, I could write a book about that. I could write, oh, that's a great sort of concept for a story. Is it that sort of thing, or is it more of you're a little bit more controlled with the ideas that come into your head?
At times, like, I'll be like, I have no idea what to do. I don't have anything creative coming at me at the moment. And then other times I'll have gluts of ideas. And so I've got notebooks where I kind of jot down my ideas and flesh them out a little bit, but depending on what I'm doing at the time, like, it might just stay there as an idea sort of thing. So usually if I'm, you know, mid-project, like if I'm working on my friend's show, or if I've, you know, got a deadline of this is when this book is due, That's when I get 1,001 ideas.
when you realize that you're restricted, that's when you start to rebel against yourself.
Yes, when I'm very busy and trying to focus on one big project, that's when I get the gazillions of ideas. And so I think, I was really strict with myself with the Fringe and the like novel deadline thing at the start of last year. So I was I had like a sheet of paper that I had stuck to my desk. So basically whenever I had an idea sort of thing, I'd jot it down on this piece of paper. And then when the page was full, shove it in a notebook and repeat. And then after I'd finished those two things, I went back and had a look through all of these really awesome ideas, and most of them were shit. But you know, at the time I was like, oh, I'm getting sick of trying to write this Fringe show. Like, oh, wouldn't this like really great story about like space and cats and I don't know, can't even remember what these ideas were, but like I had just completely random stuff written down. And yeah, at the time I was like, oh, this would be so much better to work on than my Fringe show. But turns out afterwards, no.
It's sort of like it's sort of like letting something sit and either, you know, appreciate with age or completely sort of depreciate and become something that's absolutely stale and useless. I mean, I've done a similar thing, and I've crapped on about this on the podcast a fair bit, but, you know, I've got this little notebook that I put two ideas on per page. This is a tiny little sort of quarter page size notebook. And whenever I've come up with an idea, if I'm out and about, I dump it into my phone. I've got a little note that I keep adding ideas. And then each week, most weeks, I will transfer them out of my phone and physically write them into this notebook. And I don't do anything with this notebook at all, because it's very rare that I'm sitting there with nothing to do. But in the event that I have this horrible situation where I'm absolutely bored out of my wits, I've got nothing to do, then I know that I've got this potential gold mine of million-dollar ideas that I can open up and pick one out and run with it, and all is well in the world. And every once in a while, I will open this up and just have a look and just go, just have a look and see if there's anything in there that I've actually done and I've forgotten about. And I read them, and so many of them I just cringe. I go, oh my God, like, what was I on? Was I drunk when I was putting this in here? What the hell? And it's just funny. It's funny how intoxicating an idea can be, like where you, for whatever reason, it's this rush and you become almost blinded to everything else, where your whole world becomes this one thing that's come into your mind. And it's actually, I think it's quite toxic, because it stops you from getting on with life and getting things done. So I found that it's been a really good thing to brain dump them, put them somewhere else, which then sort of calms your mind, because you know that you haven't lost the idea. But it also gives time for that idea to sit there and either tell you later on that this is good or this is absolutely horrendous and what the hell were you thinking?
Yes, that's the purpose that some of my notebooks serve. But we've spoken about this before, but I was saying how, like, my theory of ideas is, like, everyone has terrible ideas all the time. Mm. And it's the second person sort of thing whose fault it is for bad stuff happening in the world, because everyone has bad ideas. But then you'll kind of pitch them to a friend or something, and if someone goes, oh, that's a really good idea, then that's fault. When you usually, yes, that's when you start going, maybe it is a good idea, and start working on it. And it's their fault for encouraging the bad idea.
So the message really is stop blindly encouraging your friends to do shit, to execute on shit ideas. Be more honest and upfront. Tell them that shit to their face.
Exactly. Can you imagine how many, like, less crappy politicians we'd have in the world if it wasn't for someone, like, if someone hadn't said, oh, that's a good idea, you should do that? Imagine if, like, Melania, right at the start, when Trump had gone, I'm thinking of being president. Nah, honey.
Don't do it. Or maybe that wouldn't, that probably, in his case, it probably would have made him push forward even more. Don't tell me what to do. Oh, I know. I
well, maybe if his bunker had said no.
Yeah, true. I mean, before you mentioned that, I almost had in my head, and this is, here's an idea for you. I was thinking, oh, this could be a great idea for another podcast. I could do a podcast all about my shit ideas and put them out there and see if anybody wants to use these ideas. And I'll just explain the whole thing. I'll get a rush out of telling everybody about the ideas. And then I'll just say, look, if you want to do it, then go for it. You know, first, you know, whoever can claim the idea first, then it's on you. But I might get the blame for projecting really shit ideas out into the world. And I don't know if I want to be that reckless, but I kind of like the idea of it.
You could curate them a bit, like, you know, kind of put the better ideas of yours out there that you can't be bothered doing, or you don't have the time to, or you're not that into, but it would be a good idea to have that someone else do it.
Yeah, I might have to be really careful with that one, because like all of us, we have some pretty warped stuff that comes through our minds at different times of the day. And curating that first might be a good idea. But, you know, something to think about there. I've just, you know, at least I'm putting those ideas to some form of practical use by, you know, and not being selfish by just keeping them locked up in my little goldmine notebook. I can maybe share them with the world. And if somebody likes the idea or it sparks something else, then they can have it.
Yeah.
All right, something to think about. All right, keeping on the time, I'm glad that we managed to get through this chat without the whole thing imploding. So that's good. So thanks for having a round two with me. That was good. So the book is, and I don't think we've actually sort of really articulated the title of the book, but no doubt I'll have an intro at the start so people will know what we're talking about anyway. But 6,222 syllables. And people can grab it. But what's the best way, or what's your preferred way that people grab a copy of the book if they're interested?
Well, it's available on quite a few different platforms. Like, it's available on Amazon, Kobo. You can get it from Book Depository, Booktopia. You can get it in bookstores around Perth. There's a few that Stockton Crow Books, Rabble Books, Planet Books, there's quite a few. But, yeah, I've got a website, sarahfertner.com.au, and all of the links are there. So, yeah, if you're interested, you can just Google it, or you could go to my website and get more precise links if you want. I don't know.
It's almost redundant now telling people like where to go, giving them links, because most people just say just Google it, you know, just type in the word and it'll pop up. And so, you know, who knows why we even have websites or anything these days. But that's cool. And I'll make sure that there's some links that people can click through to and have a sticky beak, and hopefully go and pick up a copy and support you. And I'm looking forward to, what was it, 6,800 syllables is the next one.
Yeah, that's the next one.
And before we wrap it up, how on earth did you count 6,222 syllables off 366 haikus? Did you just use Word or something like that to work? I really want you to say that you just manually sat there and just thought about them all, but I guess it was a bit more calculated.
So the type of poem that I've written are haikus, or specifically the Shenryu haiku poems, if we're going to be all technical. But they're in a structure of 17 syllables each.
Oh, there you go. Idiot.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. There's a good example of me asking a dumb question for the team. So you're all welcome. You're all welcome. Things are often far more simple than we like to think they are. So there you go, nice and easy. All right, Sarah, thanks so much. Yeah, I'll put a bunch of links so everyone can check out your website and hopefully pick up a copy of the book. But thanks for having a chinwag.
Thank you.
To grab 6,222 syllables, the collection of 366 haikus, the book, you can go over to sarahfurtner.com. You can also buy the book from Booktopia and a lot of other online book retailers. I'll have links in the show notes over at andysocial.net. Or if you click through on your podcast player, you should be able to find all the links in there as well. Easy to support Sarah. I'll have links to all of Sarah's social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc., in the show notes as well. So lots of easy ways to support, discover, and reach out to Sarah and let her know what you thought of this episode. So thank you very much, Sarah. Much appreciated. I'm looking forward to the next book as well. Updates, updates, updates. Lord. What's coming up? Okay, so we have a show on the 26th of July at Crowbar in Sydney, formerly known as the Ballface Stag, for people that aren't playing along. This is going to be our album launch. It's going to be our party night. We're going to celebrate the release of the new album, Fallen Idols, which is coming out the week after on the 1st of August. And we're going to have the album available to purchase for whatever we've got left, because I'm pretty sure we're down to like a handful of copies, but anyway, I'll work that one out. We're going to have new merchandise. We've got a brand new set. So people in Canberra and Brisbane and Perth and Melbourne and Adelaide have been enjoying the new set list. There's new songs, there's some old favourites, and there's some unexpected surprises. Unexpected surprises. Does that sound like it? Yeah. You guys know what I mean. Anyway, there's lots of cool things in the set. It's a great new set. We've got new merchandise. We've got the new album. It's just going to be a great night. And this will be a Forge heavy metal nightclub as well, evening. So we're going to be headlining that. There's going to be DJs. It's going to be a long and impressive list of bands that are also going to be playing with us on the night. So make sure you check all that out. Please buy tickets in advance if you can. Support it, support the scene, folks. It's just a massive help for us because it just further legitimizes us with Crowbar, the venue. It legitimizes us with the promoter. And it just helps metal in Sydney again. We need a resurgence. We're, the population's here, folks. We're the biggest city in the country still, and there's plenty of metalheads out there. So come out, support what is happening, and let's make this city great again. Okay, anyway, sorry, folks. Anyway, July 26th, go and buy a ticket, and we're looking forward to it. New album, Fallen Idols, coming out on the 1st of August, as mentioned. Please go and secure your copy of the album if you've been sitting on the fence. It is going to sell out. I'm guaranteeing it's going to sell out before release date. The sellout of this version will be the first pressing of the Australian release, which contains three bonus tracks. There's two cover songs, a John Farnham and an Ice House cover song, and there's an additional original Lord studio track on there as well. Those tracks will not be on the second pressing of the album. So we are down to the last few copies. So get onto it. We have some of the deluxe bundle packs left. There's back patches and bonus CDs and everything like that. The deluxe bundle pack's limited to 100 copies, and we are getting close to selling that out as well. So look, great times for us, but if you've been sitting on the fence and twiddling your thumbs thinking, oh, she'll be right, I'll get to it later on, well, it could be a case of you snooze, you lose. So get over to lord.net.au/FI, go and have a sticky beak at it all, and please, it would mean the world to us if you can support the launch of this and spread the word as well, folks. Actually, speaking of, if you already own a copy of the album, and there's quite a few of you that have picked up the album at one of the shows, please spread the word, talk about it, leave a review somewhere. If you can leave a review somewhere online, if you've got a little blog or somewhere that you can post about it, please, anything that you can do to build the hype, get people talking about it, bring attention our way will be huge. It has been 6 years since the last studio album. And yes, we've been doing lots in between. We've got our live album, our box set, re-recordings, lots of different things have been happening, EPs as well. And touring, etc., all sorts of stuff. But this is the first studio album in 6 years. So a lot's changed in the market. So we are very excited. We're quietly confident, but we don't know yet. So far, so good. The take-up for the pre-orders is the best we've ever had for any previous Lord release or Dungeon release. And we are setting ourselves up quite well for a great launch. But we need your help. So if you can spare a couple of minutes just to type a couple of words, even one sentence or just a little tagline of that summarizes the album, or just referring people to the videos or to the previews or whatever it is, we just need as much hype as possible. So thank you so much to everybody that is doing that. And yes, if you want to just give a little bit towards us, help us out a little bit more. I mean, you already bought the album. I mean, whatever. I don't really care. But, you know, if you can do a little bit more, it'd be fantastic. Anyway, enough crapping for me. Moving along, Self-Starter, we're in the midst of season two. You can go check all that out over at selfstarter.com.au, or you can search for it on the podcast player you're listening through right now. I've got to upload them to YouTube. I don't know when I'll do that, but it's not high on my list of priorities, but I will eventually do that. But in the meantime, it's everywhere else. Nice and easy to find. It's on Spotify as well. So go and give it a whirl. Hope you enjoy it. Season two will be wrapping up at the end of the year. So quite a few episodes still to come, but please get behind it. Please share it around, especially people that may not be familiar with, I don't know, me, the Antisocial Podcast or Lord or anything like that, but may really enjoy Self-Starter from a self-employment, small business, freelancing point of view. Hopefully it's something that ticks boxes for a lot of people out in the wider audience, the wider community. So go and check it out, pass it around. All the support means a hell of a lot to me. Getting into podcasts, my video series, go and check it out on YouTube or Facebook or LinkedIn video. I've got the 11-part series up and online. Each video is on average about 2 minutes long and just talks about all the little things to consider when starting your own podcast. I want more of you to start your own podcast. I don't care what it's about. It could be the dumbest thing in the world, or it could be the most intelligent thing in the world. I do not care. Get your podcast up and running. The more of you guys that are doing it, the better for all of us. I need a movement, and it's already happening in Australia, but I think there's a lot of you folks out there that have got great ideas and have been thinking about it, sitting on your hands. Go and watch the videos. Go and check them out. If you've got any questions, please tell me. Please reach out to me. I'm happy to help. I want more and more people to kickstart their podcasts. I have grand plans, but I need you guys to come along for the journey as well. So get amongst it. Share them around. If you know somebody who's been speaking about it or has had an idea for a podcast, give them the video series to check out. It's basic as all hell. It's basic as fuck. But it's a great starting point. It might just start firing some little things in the old noggin to get you started, get you motivated, get you pumped and inspired to kickstart your podcasting career. So go and check all that out. Still haven't done the mailing list. I'm lazy as fuck, but hopefully that'll be done soon. If you go to andysocial.net or andydowling.net, there'll be a little pop-up bar for the mailing list. Sign up for that. You get a 20-page or almost 20-page PDF download, which has got all the detailed notes from the podcast video series, plus some additional content in there as well, some cool little things, a little bit of an introduction ebook, so to speak. So you can go and check all that out by signing up to the mailing list. I will start doing monthly mail outs. I've just got to get it set up. I just haven't done it yet. And, spreading myself thin. Anyway, we'll get there. We'll get there, folks. Just encourage me. Encourage me. Send me little messages and say, hey, when's that mailing list going to come out? Anyway, whatever. I think that's enough. Lots of things coming. We're getting closer to the release of Fallen Idols in the next couple of weeks. Lots of great podcasts coming soon. Once again, bulk recorded, lots of great conversations. I have a special podcast series coming out after the release of Fallen Idols, maybe within a week or two after that. We'll see how we go. But stay tuned for that one. More info to come, but very excited about that. Anyway, enough. Until next week, folks, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.